Welcome, travelers. I'm Josh.
And I'm Lee Wanika, and this is Tabletop Journeys, where we will be your not-so-humble guides on the quest for RPG adventures.
Now, here's a message from friends of the show.
Have you been looking for a break from the drudgery of the real world? What if the future wasn't so bleak? What if someone was to save us all? How would that look?
I must know, does your microwave gun go ding when it's done shooting?
Well, you're in luck, because Cybertopia is a rules-light TTRPG actual play that explores just such a reality.
We've got this disco ball, which is pretty cool. We've got these two drones flying around in here, dodging out of the smoke.
Check us out on your podcast app of choice, and hear our rolling cast of 16 fantastic players take on weird and wild missions that the corporate overlords need taken care of for totally altruistic and benevolent reasons.
Okay, this time it's serious. I would like to turn my hacking hat backwards.
Welcome, everybody, to today's episode. So we're excited to be cracking into some of our deep, dark D&D content episodes. Once again, we're going to be talking some Gamecraft this evening with my illustrious co-host, Mr. Lee Wanika Miller. Lee Wanika, how the hell are you doing today, Sarah? Woo! That's, boy, tonight's going to be a real hot minute, isn't it?
It is going to be. I tell you what.
It's been a few weeks. I'm kicking the rust off.
It has been a while. Yeah, everyone within the sound of our voices understand that Josh and I do a whole lot of things. Personal style, work style, family style, all these things. June has, when we're recording
Doggy
this,
style.
Actually, look, we do a whole lot of things, and some days, the mouth just doesn't want to work the way it wants to work. That said, we're here to talk dice. We're here to talk game. We're going to get into concentration tonight, and I'm going to let Josh lead us off. Now that his mouth has had time to start working.
And before we get into that, I just wanted to go ahead and do a quick shout-out. So I mentioned this a few weeks ago on the show that I was going to be starting a brand new in-person game with real live players who had never played before. We were running through the Stormwreck Isle starter adventure, having a grand old time. We've been playing for, I think we just finished session 3. It was either session 3 or session 4 this past Sunday, and they have decided that they're ready to go ahead and take the next step and get into like a full-fledged campaign. We're taking a few weeks off to go ahead and put that together, and then we're going to be starting rolling up a full 5-person table that we'll be doing bi-weekly games and whole nine yards. Really excited for that. I'm excited that they're having fun with the game. I'm excited that the starter adventure went well. We didn't wind up playing through all of it, but we played through enough of it. I think it's good. Dragons of Stormwreck Isle is good, and it is definitely a good introduction to new players. If you add a little bit of sauce to it, you know what I mean? But like, it's got really good bones. It kind of reminds me a little bit of like the Vecna adventure a little bit, where it's like the bones are all there, just needed a little bit of Josh sauce over on top, and then it was fine.
I love hearing that information. So I don't own Stormwreck Isle, though I think I have it on D&D Beyond, so I guess I do own it. But it's not something I've played. For whatever reason, I have not done a lot of learn to play D&D games. Most of the circles I roll in, most of the folks are playing. I'm happy to, and I look forward to being able to. And it's really nice to know that I have a good place to start, because I'm thinking Stormwreck Isle into a Ghosts of Saltmarsh would be really cool. And then I might just have to add some horror elements or more dramatic, creepy elements to Stormwreck Isle to be able to get there. Really love hearing that's a great base to start with. So the next time I do have that, I'll have something to go to.
Yeah, I definitely felt like it was a good starter adventure. The rule set that it came with was nicely scaled down. It didn't get too complicated. The pre-generated characters were good. The wizard got a little complicated just because wizards are complicated, right? But yeah. But at the end of the day, like, that's just baked into the cake. I will say that the most of the interesting stuff that I threw in there, I took from Fizban's Treasury of Dragons, actually. So, yeah. Like, there was one point where they were doing an exploration bit. They were in the temple where they kind of meet their main NPCs and everything like that, and then they had to go off to an adventure. On the way there, there were these standing stones that had the dragon elegy carved into them as they were passing, stuff like that. Some flavor elements that set out kind of the advanced game, so to speak, in there, which I think that they seem to appreciate. It gave them some information on kind of like what was going on with Tiamat and Bahamut and everything like that. So it kind of made the rest of the adventure make sense, so that as they started realizing, oh, it's these, I don't want to spoil it, but basically when they start realizing what's going to happen, they knew the names of what was going to be going on. It made a little bit more sense that way. It gave them some background on the people that they were meeting and everything like that.
Yeah, and if anybody's interested, we did a great review of the Fizban's book a couple years back. I will make sure it pops up on the Tabletop Journey site and the community page, so if folks are interested in hearing about that book, that is definitely something that you can get, because regardless of where the games go in the future, the fact is these are great resources to flavor the games you play currently. So whatever when you look at what you're doing today, there are always great sources from before, whether they're part of a current rule set or not. And I think Fizban's book is a perfect example of that. Yeah. Great flavor for the games you play today.
So totally aside, before we get into our episode for tonight, a little trivia question for you, Mr. Miller. So at the point that we're recording this, we've just put out episode 181. We're getting into our content with friend of the show, Jay Moores and Faye. So episode 181. Do you know what episode, because there were two of them, we did Fizban's in two parts. Do you know what two episodes were the Fizban episodes?
I do not, but I'm going to hazard a guess. It was 81 and 82, maybe?
Ooh, it was 44 and 45, which means that they were like 2.5 years ago.
I said a couple. I had a good sense. I may not have been spot on, but I had a good sense. I knew I had a few less of these gray hairs at the time.
It was a hot minute ago. Yeah, exactly. So, anywho, let's go ahead and dive into today's episode. So, as Luminika said, we're going to be talking tonight about concentration. And before we get into the episode proper, Luminika, set the stage for us. Why are we talking about concentration of all things?
Yeah, so one of the things that came up with a character I'm playing in a different game was the plethora of concentration spells for rangers at lower levels. Like, so many of their available spells are concentration. And I started trying to homebrew ways to work around it, and I wasn't sure I was on the right path, so to speak, pun intended. And one of the things that I recognize is I don't have to go this alone. In addition to being able to ask questions of my GM, Benito, my co-host and colleague and great friend of many years, Josh, I also had the opportunity to speak out to and ask questions of the Tabletop Journeys community and the gaming community as a whole. And so I did. On a lark, I just posed a question to everyone, and the question went like this. Given the action economy, and I do understand the need for limits, can concentration be a deterrent for spell options, especially with half-casters? Now, I worded that question a little poorly, but what I was really driving at is, how much does the volume of concentration spells for half-casters steer your decision, impact your choices for spells? And there's a back question that I never intended to ask, but everybody that pretty much responded answered whether or not they thought concentration worked or not, whether it was a good thing or a bad thing. That really wasn't what I was driving at, but it did bring up an interesting question. So I wanted to actually break this down. Josh and I talked about it a lot at the time, and we wanted to take the opportunity to have this discussion with y'all. We're on your couches today. We're sitting in the backseat of your cars as you're driving to and from. So we want to have this conversation with you, because I think it's a valid conversation for GMs and for players alike. And so there's two questions, really. One, does concentration work? Is it good or not? That's the primary question. The secondary question, even though I did them backwards originally, is how much does it impact the choices you make at the table? Yeah. And I think those are very interesting questions to discuss. With that, Josh, take us away. Give us your thoughts here.
So, first of all, I love that you mentioned that, you know, you were on your couch or in your backseat, because folks that have known you and I for a really long time, back when kind of the origins of these conversations that we have began 20 mumble years ago, this conversation is going to feel very similar, I think, because at least based on the conversation that we've had leading up to this point, it has felt very similar. I'm going to start, Your Honor, by presenting a case that says that the premise of the question is inherently flawed. The three legs of the stool that I'm going to go ahead and trot out here are, and we'll kind of get into more specifics in a second here, are that, first of all, you're talking about a half-caster whose primary focus is not spellcasting. So the mm-hmm. fact that their concentration spells on their list may be higher than others, sure, maybe. But the problem is that you're dealing with a ranger class whose spells are largely utility anyway. You wouldn't want to give them different spells than the ones that are on the list, right? It just so happens that the ones that the rangers are going to want most likely fall into the category of spells that have concentration. Those things are things that prolong buffs or debuffs, things that last more than a round, or things that take more than a round to cast, right? The fact that you're dealing with the ranger spell list itself as a heavy concentration element, a non-starter for me. The second one that's kind of a non-starter for me is that the premise, as you initially flipped it, that the majority of their spells have concentration isn't right, because the majority of ranger spells don't have concentration. We were talking about first level spells mostly. I think they either have 17 or 19 first level spells, and it's divided almost in half, but the half with concentration is on the lower half. It's less than 50%. So the majority of their spells don't have concentration. That's thing two. And the third leg of the stool is that even if you said, well, their percentage of concentration spells is too high, even if it's not the majority, it's still higher than every other class. How I'm going to present that particular leg of the stool is by asking a question. And that question is, which of these categories do you think has a higher percentage of concentration spells? First level ranger spells or second level wizard spells?
I don't have a great answer to that question, but based on the nature of your question, I'm going to assume the answer is second-level wizards.
Second-level wizard spells. Do you know how many second-level wizard spells require concentration by percentage?
I do not.
Nearly 75% of second-level wizard spells require concentration.
That is wackadoodle.
That's wackadoodle. But wizards are primary casters, so they also have 50-something spells to go ahead and pick from, which I will grant that when you have a limited spell list like rangers, the fact that concentration is an important mechanic feels like a regressive tax, right? It feels like a bigger deal because you have fewer spells to pick from. So having now presented my three-legged stool, I will also grant you a small quarter to go ahead and say that it probably feels like a bigger deal to rangers because wizards have so much choice to pick from that it's not as big a deal, right? You know, the billionaire that has to go ahead and pay tax on his boat doesn't have to worry so much as the poor family that has to pay tax on their food, right? It's just the nature of the beast. That's the way that it is, right? All that aside, I'm going to go ahead and start. So we're going to talk tonight specifically about what we want to do with concentration and how we think concentration. So now that I have presented my stool, the first thing that I'm going to say is that we don't need to do anything to concentration. Concentration, as it's written, does exactly what it says it wants to do. It needs to put a limitation on spellcasters in specific categories. When they have prolonged spells, when they have spells that take a long time to cast, or when they have spells that are specifically buffs and debuffs that last more than a round. That's why concentration exists, is to go ahead and make sure that those things are held in check so that wizards specifically, wizards and sorcerers and primary casters specifically, cannot just battlefield suppress the entire thing without any sort of a check and balance. I think rangers kind of get caught up in the wash in fixing that mechanic. So my first premise is that concentration doesn't need any change whatsoever. Rant done. Have at it.
When we first held this conversation, I would have, and probably did, fight you tooth and nail on that for a lengthy period of time.
You did.
We're talking Facebook IMs, actual phone conversations, a whole lot of back and forth.
You had a character that you wanted to do cool things with, and you didn't feel like you were going to be able to. And I understand that. You know.
And then I did my research, And then I did some thinking and posing the question to the greater community, getting a lot of feedback. Even though I didn't get a lot of answers specifically to what I was going for, I got enough answers that led me down other paths of inquiry that brought me to a wholesale different conclusion. I'm not sure if the On the Right Path vlog episode I did on this, which is a real short thing, comes out before or after this episode. I don't think it's been scheduled yet, so we'll figure that out later. But a little spoiler alert, I really changed my opinion during this process. I started saying something needs to be done with it. Then I looked at it, I looked at the reasons, I did the research, and then I thought back to all the games I've run, I thought to all the games I've played, and I came to the exact same conclusion. I don't think concentration needs to change. When we get to it, I have other things that I think need to be changed. I will say this about the spell list issue. Back last year, Unearthed Arcana had proposed not having class spell lists and having three spell lists, one being primal, one being arcane, and one being, I keep wanting to say religious, but that's not the term they use.
No, it was deific or divine.
And I thought that would have been a really good fix to this issue. I think the class lists get too limited in general, and I thought those larger lists work better. I understand Jeremy Crawford and Chris Perkins' statement about much larger lists and too many classes eats the wizard's lunch because they should have the largest list. I get that. But I also feel that there's a number of druid spells that I think rangers should have access to. And while I think most of them they probably do, I wonder, and I have not done the research yet, if that's accurate. I think they both draw from the same type of spell magic, so to speak, or source magic. So why shouldn't they have the same list? Why shouldn't anybody, why shouldn't priests and clerics have... priests and clerics. Why shouldn't clerics and paladins have the same list? It's divine power or from their oath or what have you. Why shouldn't that be a similar list? And then wizards should have access to arcane. And then maybe now you get, that gives you the option with bards where they're the only class that has a specific list or whatever because they're pulling from all these different areas. And then warlocks, they should be able to pull from whatever their patron would most likely deal with. You know?
Yep.
I really thought that was a great direction. WotC's not going there. Other games that I know of are not going there, so I don't think it's something we're going to see. But I truly liked that direction, and I think that direction would have gone a long way to mitigating the feel at the table. Because I really do think at the end of the day, this comes down to a play feel much more than it is a mechanical advantage or disadvantage situation.
Yep, I hear that. Yeah, so that's kind of the first premise tonight, is that does concentration need to change? Probably not. It does exactly what it needs to do, and it actually does a pretty good job at it. To your point, though...
Show's over. Thanks, folks.
Exactly, yeah, so we'll see you next week when we talk.
Yeah, you ain't getting out of here that easy. Yep.
Exactly. But to your point... And now is the time to go ahead and crack open this nut. It's the spell list themselves that's busted. So let's go down that road. Like,
yeah,
how can we go ahead and address this?
So I think the answer is increasing the type of spells that are there. Basically, adding more non-concentration options per level. I think WotC has the ability. Anybody can crunch the numbers. You did it. I did it for one character class, one level. But it wouldn't take much to say, what's the proper percentage of concentration spells for spells at a given level? What is that percentage? What are we okay with? Right? Yeah. Now, maybe that's higher for, say, clerics than it is for, say, paladins. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's higher for druids versus rangers. Maybe for wizards, it's 50-50. But I think if the given is we're going to have class spell lists, then the answer to me is decide what that percentage is going to be for the game and add more options that are not concentration spells. So you don't have to change anything that exists. You don't have to make something non-concentration that is concentration, but you just have to increase the non-concentration total of spells. So you could do other spells that maybe you had on the back burner that you want to add in or whatever. Perhaps you can take a look at some of the concentration spells. This is fantastic. It needs to be concentration if it's held long term, but maybe what you want to do is have two layers to the spell. Maybe it can be cast one round without concentration, but every round after that it has concentration.
Yeah.
So you get one free round without implying concentration, and then when it's your turn again, when it comes around to your initiative on the next turn, you decide I need to concentrate on this spell and keep it rolling.
Yeah.
So you can make that choice. I think that would be a way to do that. So if you gave, and not all spells need this, but if you took some of those concentrations and give them those two levels, those two options, some of them with those two options, and then you added, so maybe concentration spells aren't 50 or 75 in the case of wizards. I don't think any level for any spellcaster should be 75. That's wackadoodle. Yeah. I think at most it should be 50-50. At most.
It wasn't quite 75, but it was definitely more than ranger at first level. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that's the best fix. It's just fixing the other part of that equation, which is if concentration's fine, but it feels bad at the table, how do we fix the feel? Give more options is the answer.
Yep. I like the option of addressing the spell angle, and especially when you start talking about doing it in a way that allows you to cast a spell without requiring concentration or prolong that same spell by using the concentration, giving players the option of one or the other, right? It feels very Big Adventure game in that way, right? Where, like, casting the spell is easy, but doing any of the things that you want to do to augment it requires a little bit of power, requires a little bit of oomph, that kind of thing. So that I like that feeling an awful lot. And again, it feels like, we talked about this a little bit, about how in Pathfinder 2, that concentration is not an active thing that you must maintain. Concentrate is a trait that things have, and that if they have that trait, it means that you can't engage with it if you're in certain situations, right? So if you're a barbarian and you're raging, you can't perform an action which requires you to concentrate. Stuff like that. And decoupling it from explicitly magic, for one, I think makes sense. But two, making concentration itself more binary, as either you can either do this thing or you cannot, because you cannot concentrate right now, but doesn't really have the mechanical, like, because I think it's the concentration check thing, and we're going to get into that later in the show too, but that's kind of where this whole thing falls flat for me, is that, like, you know, concentration does what it does really well, but there are ways to go ahead and make it just narratively sing a little bit more.
If it were more a trait aspect like you're talking about, similar to what we see in 2D20 games like Star Trek Adventures.
Exactly,
Or Fallout. What you then get the opportunity to use to create abilities, feats, that allow for it. So, focused spellcaster. You have a warcaster, which in effect gives you advantage on the roll in combat, right? But how about you have a focused spellcaster feat, where that basically says, hey, you get advantage on the roll for specific situations. So it is not about the combat element of it, but it's you can't concentrate on something if you're in the middle of a chase scene. Yeah. If you're riding a horse, how are you concentrating on a spell? You're in the middle of a storm, your boat is being tossed to and fro, you have a hard time concentrating. Yeah. You should
How
be
are you
able
concentrating
to do that.
On fly right now? How are you doing that?
Yeah, you're in a hurricane. What the heck's going on here? You're in a tornado. Yeah. Twister. Because that movie's coming up this summer. You're getting zapped up by a twister fighting an air elemental. How are you concentrating? That doesn't make sense. It is hard with the mechanics of D&D to address that specifically, unless damage is taken.
Yep.
And not everything needs to take damage, right? If a fighter attacks you but says, I'm going to use a push, they still have to roll an attack, but now they're not doing damage. And so now that wizard falls on his butt and they still can concentrate because they took no damage.
Yeah.
A big old Goliath champion fighter pushes me.
Yep.
it's hard to concentrate on that.
Yeah.
And if the Goliath fighter wasn't scary enough, let's say you're a bunch of high-level characters, but this big old demon decides to knock you around. Demogorgon kicks you with his hoof.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. And decides, I'm going to push, so you're prone, so all my cronies get to hit you, but you still get to concentrate?
Yep.
I think there are some issues there that come up because it is only when damage happens and not a more like a scene trait or a action trait.
It's the Fellowship of the Ring when the Balrog all of a sudden appears in the Mines of Moria. Good thing Gandalf was not concentrating on a spell, because there's... Okay, maybe Gandalf could, because he was a supernatural being anyway, but...
Yeah, I'd be concentrating on pooping my pants.
Exactly.
Nothing for nothing. And look, I'm going to say something that might come across a little weird, but I'm telling you, nobody would have to tell this short guy, run, you fools. Gandalf said, run you... Where'd the short guy go? I would be...
He's already gone.
Yeah. Like, there'd be a bunch of hobbits saying, where'd the other short guy go? Right. I would be gone.
Yeah,
it would be like run, Forrest, run up in that piece. I would not be hanging about.
You know,
no concentration necessary.
Yeah, because of all the reasons why we are glad that Josh is not actually Samwise Gamgee, it's because when my friend Leewinika gets attacked by Shelob, you're dying. I'm sorry, but I'm not rescuing you from the gigantic spider. That's just, I'm going back to the Shire. I might even take the ring with me, and I'm going to go have myself some elevensies and a good beer, and we will toast you in your absence. But I'm sorry, but you're dying with the spider. All right, let's step aside for our mid-episode break here before this goes too far off the rails. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about some actual things that we think can be done. Now that we've spent the first half hour saying that concentration doesn't need to change, we're going to go ahead and come back with some suggestions about some ways that concentration maybe can change to go ahead and be better at your table. We'll be right back after the mid-episode break. Welcome to the middle of the show. We wanted to take a minute and thank the people who helped make this show possible, our Patreon supporters. We like to shout out our adventurer-level Patreons, so extra big thanks to Tim Morris, Joe Harney, Dave Rideout, Adam Scaramella, and Marty Napier. Patreon supporters get exclusive content, free copies of all of our published and unpublished game supplements, early access to episodes, and free invitations to our monthly games. You can learn more at www.patreon.com/ttjourneys.
Speaking of published material, have you checked out the supplements we have on DM's Guild? We have two full books, The Traveler's Guide to Collaborative Worldbuilding, The Traveler's Guide to the Multiverse, and you can combine it with all of our supplements to make your next role legendary. Go to www.ttjourneys.com/DM's Guild for more information.
If you're looking for Tabletop Journeys swag or need a fantastic set of new dice, then you should check out the Tabletop Journeys Spring Store and our affiliate, FanRoll Dice. You can make your first purchase through FanRoll at 10% off, and every purchase helps support the show. You can learn more about that at www.ttjourneys.com/FanRoll. And if you want to get some awesome t-shirts, hoodies, hats, or other gear, check out www.ttjourneys.com/swag to get redirected to our spring store. These are the same vendors that we use for our add-ons when we do Kickstarters and stand by their products.
But the best way you can support the show is by joining the conversation. Did you love one of the episodes? Did you disagree with something we said? Maybe you just want us to cover your favorite game system a little more or talk about a brand new system. Check us out at linktr.ee/TTJourneys. That's our link tree. And join the conversation.
We hope you're enjoying this week's show, so here comes the second half. Don't forget to subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to us, and if your platform lets you leave a comment or a rating, why not hit the button and show your support? Thanks again for listening, and now on with the show. Alrighty there, we are back. So we spent the first half of the show tonight talking about concentration and why concentration doesn't need to change. That really the issue with concentration is in the spell lists themselves, not in the concentration characteristic that is required to go ahead and maintain here. And saying concentration doesn't really need to change. So now what we're going to do is we're going to completely flip the script on that, and we're going to offer some things that we think might help make concentration a little bit better. Luminika, I went first last time. Do you want to go ahead and start off with the first one tonight?
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
In our pre-show, we talked about it. You and I had a lot of similar ideas, so I think we're going to have some agreement here. I really thought one of the interesting ways to help concentration be more fun at the table and play better is scaling. Yep. I really thought that there has to be a way. I don't know what levels. I haven't broken it down to the specifics as far as what level, what needs to happen at what. But I think there's a way where character level comes into play. You're a caster, it doesn't matter. But when you get to a specific character level, you should be better at concentration. And that can take forms in a couple different ways. One of those ways, and the one that Josh and I both liked a whole lot, was the ability to concentrate on an additional spell. Now, I'm not saying you have to let that go to 4, 5, 6, or 7. I think that's ridiculous. But just the ability to be so good at your craft. Game goes to 20. Let's say 10 is that level. Or if we say most games don't go beyond 13, then we say 6 or 7 is that level. You pick that halfway point, and then you say, this is the level where casters can now concentrate on more than one spell. But that's only half of that process. If you're concentrating on two spells, it should be harder for you to maintain concentration on either or both of those. So when you create that scaling mechanic for number of spells concentrated, you then have to make that harder. That could take a couple different forms, and as I've been thinking about it, I think one of the ways is concentration checks are currently 10 plus the amount of the damage, whatever's less, or whatever's greater. Or 10 plus half the damage, whatever's greater.
Is it 10 plus half?
It's 10 plus half. No, it's...
Hold on. Let's get this right. Hold on one sec. Making concentration checks. PC gets hurt. For example, if your PC takes 5 points of damage, they need to make a concentration check with a DC of 10.
Yep.
Okay, so the base difficulty class of concentration checks is 10.
Yep.
Or the equivalent of half the damage your PC takes, whichever is higher. So if you take 5 points of damage, your DC is 10. If you take 30 points of damage, your DC is 15.
Correct. I think the answer to that is it should be, that should increase. If you're doing two spells, that DC should increase to, say, 15. Like, your base DC gets harder by a factor of five. It's 10 if you're only concentrating on one. It's 15 if you're concentrating on two. I think that makes a significant difference. I also think, and one of the ideas we toss around, but some playtesting may be involved, should you have to make that roll against both spells or one for both? I think there's some playtesting to work that out. I don't think we need to get into the nitty-gritty on that here tonight. But I think if you're going to scale in meaningful ways, I think scaling the check in addition to scaling the number of spells in some fashion makes a lot of sense. And I think if you did that at, say, I was originally thinking 10, or if you did 7, 14, after 14, maybe you get 3 because you're super high level. You're a caster of epic proportion at that point. But maybe only full casters get that 3. Maybe everybody else only gets the 2. I think there's ways to scale that and have that work out really nice. Give people a reason when they're playing half casters to stick with that class without multi-classing a little bit longer.
So I think that maybe the way to do that is as a feat. You get pick up a feat that allows you to go ahead and concentrate on an additional spell. I think that maybe in that situation, a negative 5 penalty on the concentration check is too extreme. If you're burning a feat for it, maybe 2 instead of 5. But yeah, I think you're right. There's some playtesting to go ahead and wiggle out the details and in how that actually works to go ahead and make it work. I'd initially thought that it could be cool to go ahead and scale the number of spells that you can concentrate on with your proficiency bonus, but you're right. That is stupid. Even like just at 13th level, a 13th level wizard, the average wizard for the average campaign, being able to concentrate on five spells at a shot, that's too much. That's too much.
I certainly don't think you should be able to concentrate on more spells than you have the ability to have magic items.
Exactly. And to put it in perspective, if you make it a feat, even if you burned every feat slot on the ability to concentrate, which is a choice, I suppose, you can go ahead and do that. But even if you did that, assuming that you get one feat at character generation, you only have three additional feats by 13th level, so that's four, but you have burned every slot to be able to concentrate on four spells at a time. That is a significant cost to that caster to be able to go ahead and do that. So, I think that the feat mechanic kind of meshes with narratively what you would want your character to invest in. That's what do feats represent other than those like monumental milestone kind of improvements that a character can get, the ability to continue to concentrate. Again, pouring everything into that ability, maybe that's worth it. That still means that by level 20, they could get, let's see, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, they could get 6 by level 20, or plus their 1. So they could get a total of 7 by level 20 if they really wanted to. But you know what? A 20th level wizard that can concentrate on 7 spells, I'm not going to go ahead and say no. Like that's 20th level wizard. That's he can blink me out of existence.
It is what it is. At that point, you have a wish spell. You could wish to be able to do that. And as a GM, I'd be like, I would not think at 20th level that would be game breaking, unless of course you're playing a pre written adventure that has bullcrap for its 20th level fight.
Right.
But like I said, so there's some playtesting that could go into that. I think there's a way to do that. This is homebrew, y'all. None of the game systems I'm aware of as we're talking now are even baking this kind of thing into their game at all. So it is definitely something you could put into your homebrew game and make that very cool. I could see folks building a specific wizard. Maybe, you know, somebody's playing a new wizard subclass that is one of the roped wizards from Kryn that has this level of power, because Kryn is a very high fantasy, high magic world if you're in the right place and have the right group and factions to do that with. I could see somebody saying, let's make this for our Kryn game. But I don't think that would necessarily work in other games.
Or Dark Sun. I can see it working in Dark Sun.
Yep. There are ways, you know, a Defiler or a Preserver could do this. So I think the merit of having these discussions is it gives you neat ideas for one-shots or different things, and certainly gives GMs ideas for their NPCs, their adversaries, or what have you, to make NPCs cool, and they can do things that are different. I am one of the GMs who says there is not a requirement for an NPC stat block to follow the exact same rules as a player character sheet. It is a stat block. It does a thing mechanically that allows it to be narratively fun in an encounter of whatever kind. If setting up with that villain concentrate on two different things makes your narrative better as an adversary, set it up to do that. Make sure you create that scaling, that fairness thing, so that the players have an ability to work that down. And I'm thinking of Jafar, when he had all the genie power, he turned the carpet into something. He turned the tiger into something else. He turned a boo into something else. You know, he started doing all these things. Jafar was attacking the entire player character group all at once, and that process made it harder for him to focus on Aladdin basically trick speaking him into making the dumb wish and basically losing, because he couldn't concentrate enough to get that part right. He basically got hornswoggled because he was too busy concentrating on other things. That is narratively strong, so building a stat block that can do that is awesome.
Yep. I'm thinking too of anytime you've seen like Darth Vader and his ability to just use the Force to do a variety of different things all at the same time, including sustain his own life. Let's be honest. Like, He's basically held together by his own anger and will of the force. Right. Like, that's concentration. I think that you're right. So I think scaling up concentration a little bit, allowing them to go ahead and do a little bit more with cost, makes a lot of sense. I'm going to go a different direction with that, with my option for kind of making concentration a little bit narratively better. And that's that. And I think that would actually be really important if you do decide to go ahead and increase the number of things that a person can concentrate on. But even if not, I think that the consequences for having your concentration broken should be stronger. Right now, the only consequence is that you drop concentration on your spell, which can be mechanically poor. If you're, you know, if your paladin is up there fighting and you're buffing him or you're making him fly or whatever, there's any number of things that are bad if you lose concentration in those kind of situations, but not to you. You're the one that lost concentration. You're the one that took damage. You're the one that was attacked. Something should happen to you. Some sort of magical backlash should happen if you wind up breaking that concentration in a spell that is supposed to be, you know, because again, if you're thinking about, and maybe this is just me, but if you're thinking about like the magical universe that you are tapping into, you're tapping into that weave fabric of the universe to go ahead and perform extraordinary tasks. If all of a sudden that snaps, there has to be backlash. And that's been one of those things that I have chased in D&D 5 since I've started playing it, really. So going on, I don't know, 5 or 6 years now. I think that the consequences of magical power are really non-existent. And so that would be one thing that I would say, that if you're concentrating on a spell and your concentration breaks because you took damage, maybe there's a roll table to go ahead and roll against. So something similar to like the wild magic surge, you know, something like that. The wild magic table, that something happens if that concentration is broken. If you're concentrating on multiple things and your concentration is broken, maybe we start talking about exhaustion, that kind of thing. Like, that's, I think that there are ways to go ahead and build in consequences to the breaking of concentration that are narratively better than just saying, oh, you dropped Jim Bob the Paladin because he was flying and you were concentrating on that spell and now he's falling to the ground and now Jim Bob's taking damage. Sorry, Jim Bob. But
you'll be all right.
Yeah. And you can go ahead and cast Fly again the next round. There's no, I've lost my concentration and now I can't cast magic anymore. There's nothing like that. And I think that there are a variety of things that you should look at to try to go ahead and fix that.
Yeah, I absolutely think you're correct. I don't know how to get the dial just right on that, but I definitely think, especially if you're scaling the ability, the consequences need to scale with that. So they get harsher as you can do more. I think if you do one, you absolutely have to do the other. But in general, even if you're not doing the scaling, I think you're right. There needs to be tougher consequences. I think magic in general doesn't have consequences. I think there are styles of game that it makes more sense. If you wanted to play Grimdark or you wanted to play a grittier, more realistic, perhaps in a more realistic, lower magic setting, maybe all magic is concentration, even if it's just for the one round or whatever. Or whatever. Maybe all magic effects that are instant are automatically 2 rounds.
Takes a round to cast and then triggers in the next round or something.
Yeah, but the concentration is there. But I do think in those types of settings, especially if you're low magic or what have you, perhaps the answer is that kind of backlash, whether it be psychic damage or what have you. And then you can build in feats that are like, I'm resistant to that damage, right? Yep. Not immune, but you're resistant to that damage because you're hardened against it. I've been mentally trained and mentally fortified to do this. So perhaps you've got like a mage order that is very much like monks in the way that they practice, so that you can build features for them versus everybody else who might have to get a feat for it. But I do think in that instance, something like at that first level of concentration where it's only one spell, it's a D4. Psychic damage, right? A D4 psychic damage plus 1 for every spell level. I think that makes sense for that. Yep. Your concentration got broke. Now, as you scale up, if you have that feat and if you're concentrating on 2, now we're talking a D6.
Or even 2D4. I mean, a D4 for every, yeah.
Yeah, a D4.
I guess it would be 4D4. If you're concentrating on two second-level spells, if it's a d4 per level, that's 4d4. Not going to be a huge amount of damage if you're powerful enough to go ahead and have the feat, but also not nothing.
Yeah, well, and also, that's 44 plus one for every spell level involved. So you're casting two spells, let's say they're six apiece, that's 12 psychic damage plus your rolls, right? So that's not a small amount of damage for a spleeny magic user.
Right.
And it's all psychic, and that is just in and of itself, not including whatever other damage they took in that battles, right? So I think costs like that make sense, and they're great narratives. The GM can describe, the pain in your head is excruciating, and the blood trickles from your nose because your concentration is breaking or what have you.
I do think that in a situation like that, if you're going to go ahead and roll in kind of a damage scaling mechanic for when concentration is broken, I think that you can't also make the concentration check more difficult. I think that's going to have to be a one or the other, right? Because you don't want to go ahead and say you're concentrating on a second spell. Your check is now 15. And you're going to get... I was going to say a slightly different phrase, but you're going to get whacked upside the forehead with a 2x4 now also. Yeah. So I not only have made your check more difficult, but now there's a significant consequence to the fact that you have failed it. I think that's going to have to be a one or the other. I don't think you can do both.
Absolutely agree, but I think depending on the type of game you're playing, one or the other would make sense, right? If you're not playing a grimdark game, you're not playing that low magic setting, and then it would make sense to just make the check harder. If you are playing those other things, throw in that damage. Make it hurt. Make the cost. What was it that Debbie Allen said? You want fame, you want fortune. Well, fame costs. Yeah. And right here, right now is where you pay the price. I misquote badly, but that's, but that is kind of the thought process there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. I think the last thing that I would say about how does one change concentration to go ahead and make it better or a little bit more rounder, I'm going to kind of call back to the very beginning of the show here a little bit, and I'm just going to say, don't touch it. Homebrew spells fix the spell list like we talked about originally, but concentration itself, like I said, it's a mechanic that is laid out to say it's controlling a particular aspect of the game, and it is controlling a particular aspect of the game in a very narrow way, right? It's not as wide as it is with Pathfinder, where everything can have the concentrate trait on it. And magic items can have it, spells can have it, actions can have it, whatever. There are all sorts of things that can have the concentrate trait on them. So concentration in D&D 5 is very narrowly defined and very narrow in focus. It is specifically to go ahead and counter spellcasting. I think that this is one of those situations where there are some cool things that we can go ahead and do narratively, but maybe we touch everything around it instead of touching it.
Absolutely agree. As kind of evidence of that factor, I'm going to briefly bring up Tales of the Valiant. They recently released their Player's Guide and Monster Vault. I have physical copies as well as digital now. They've come in because I was an early backer. I believe they are available at stores on July 17th, 2024. But one of the things I noticed as we were prepping for this episode was I pulled up the D&D 2014 concentration rules, and I pulled up the Tales of the Valiant concentration rules. And if you were to hazard a guess, Josh, since you did this to me, sight unseen, how many words would you say are different between Tales of the Valiant concentration rules and 2014 D&D concentration rules? How many words would you say are different between the two?
I think that the number of words that would be different between those two would be directly proportional to how different Tales of the Valiant says it was going to be from D&D 5, which would mean zero. I almost got you. I almost caught you mid-sip. You saw that one coming.
Yeah. The answer to your question is wrong. It is not zero. There is an actual difference. The number of words that are different is one. And that word, it's actually not even a word. It's an acronym. DM and GM.
Ugh.
They are exactly the same rules. Now, on some level, it probably should have been based on what they said this was going to be and what this was going to be about.
Yeah.
But what I think is important is Tales of the Valiant changed a number of things that I think were broken with D&D 2014, or at least could have been enhanced. Broken's probably a strong word, but definitely could be enhanced and could be fixed, could be improved on. could be added. This wasn't one of them. And I think the feedback we got from the greater community, and specifically our Tabletop Journeys Facebook group and one of our patrons, Dave Ridout, was just what we, the same conclusion we came to. It's not a problem with the mechanic. It's a problem with all the things that are around it.
It's a problem with all the things that are around it, yeah.
And I think even competitive companies who are striving for points of differentiation while still being close to the core of the game have to say, if you're going to do the core of this game without changing huge aspects of the game, i.e., the spell source material, whether you've got arcane, divine, and primal sources versus individual class lists. If you're going to stick with class lists, then concentration really needs to stay the same. And I am pleasantly surprised and very happy that after I started on one part of this spectrum, talking it through and learning from all this research and all these conversations brought me to the other side of this conversation saying, it was pretty damn good where it was.
They probably got it right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is there are things that they've gotten wrong. There are missteps that they have made.
Yep.
Concentration isn't one of them.
Isn't one of them. So, yeah. All right, everybody, that is going to be our show for the evening here. Let's see what comes up next on the show here. Next week, actually, we have a really special treat for you all. Lou and Nika and I are trying a little something different to go ahead and try to bring some spice to the show. And so next week, we are going to have an episode coming out about the Wizards of the Coast book, Quests from the Infinite Staircase. However, it's not going to be your normal audio podcast. We're actually doing that one video. We're trying to go ahead and do more video content over on YouTube. So make sure you go over to YouTube and check it out and see what you think about us having the discussion while actually looking at our faces. Let's see how that goes. And as always, we have got more Star Trek Preservations content coming up. We are firmly in the middle of episode 6. What was going to be part 2 of a 2-part episode is actually part 2 of a 3-part episode, because episode 7 is going to be recording in a couple of weeks here, and that will hopefully finally tie up the plot line that the Delamis Christian has found themselves stuck in at Zunian 3 and the space array there. So hopefully after episode 7, the players will get released back to Liwanika so that I stop making their life miserable. But yeah, that's our show for this. As always, we want to go ahead and hear your feedback. So please leave us comments on the episode here. Engage with us on social media. We want to know, what are your thoughts on concentration, and what do you think? I mean, our ultimate conclusion is that leave concentration the way that it is. We also have some ideas on how to go ahead and make it narratively a little bit more interesting. So which side of the aisle do you fall on? Do you want to go ahead and change it, or do you want to keep it the way that it is? We would love to hear your comments and your feedback down below.
And we will probably revisit this conversation after the release of the 2024 rules, because we'll have new spell lists. They've promised a huge number of new spells. We'll see with that whether they've fixed some of the spell issues that we mentioned here with the new spells, because if they improve those percentages, they will have actually done what Tabletop Journeys has recommended.
Yeah, go figure. Yeah, so.
Hashtag call your boys.
All right, everybody. Thank you very much for listening. Appreciate your time as always, and we'll talk to you next week. Good night, everybody.
Good night, all.
Thank you for joining us. This has been Tabletop Journeys. We would love to hear your feedback on our show today. Join us at www.ttjourneys.com, where you can subscribe to the blog to leave comments and see all the content that we publish beyond the podcast.
You can also stay in touch by subscribing to our Twitter, Tumblr, or Instagram at TT Journeys, joining our Facebook group, Tabletop Journeys, or by sending an email directly to podcast@ttjourneys.com. Our full episodes come out every week on Friday, and every Tuesday features actual play and gameplay showcase episodes. Looking for early access? You can support the show and get episodes before everyone else at www.patreon.com/TTJourneys. Check it out today and see all the awesome benefits we bring to our supporters.
Lastly, if you're listening to us on Stitcher, iTunes, Podchaser, Spotify, or Audible, we would really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe to the podcast on that platform. Thank you for listening and for being a part of our growing community. And we bid you fair tides, friends, for legends await.